Conservative Theological University has about 6,000 titles and about 120,000 volumes available. Shop today at conservative.edu. Scroll down to Bookstore, browse, and place your order today. That's conservative.edu and scroll to Bookstore.
Life can change so abruptly. Just ask Paul. He's a hardworking entrepreneur. He's young. He's got a young family. Suddenly, though, he develops a rare medical condition where he lost the use of both of his arms.
I could no longer drive a car, couldn't use a computer, couldn't type, couldn't use a mouse. I could not hold my son, who was about a month old.
Paul and his family were facing a mountain of medical bills, but they're so thankful that they're members of MediShare.
I think if someone asked me, like, hey, does MediShare really work? I'm living proof that it works. My four children are living proof that it works. My arms, which have been healed, are living proof that MediShare works. Just knowing the emotional peace of mind, knowing that our needs are going to be taken care of when we have some type of medical problem, that is such a huge blessing to us.
It could be a huge blessing to you, too. People save so much and love being part of MediShare. Call now, 844-55-BIBLE. That's 844-55-BIBLE. 844-55-BIBLE.
Today's Let's Face the Issues broadcast is pre-recorded with Dr. Reed Sheftall. Dr. Sheftall will also be Dr. Youngblood's guest for tomorrow's live broadcast, so you can join in on the discussion. And now, here's Dr. Gene A. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Portions of this program may be pre-recorded.
Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day, with the goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on three regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is also heard on these three stations in Jacksonville, Florida, St. Augustine, Florida, and Brunswick, Georgia. Now there's a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. Your help is needed to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is crucial to take the next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com or to send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258, Attention Radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, again, thank you so much for joining us on Let's Face the Issues today as we continue our week series on COVID, Fact or Fiction. We have the privilege and the opportunity to have with us Dr. Reed Sheftall. Dr. Sheftall is a plastic surgeon, a heart surgeon. He has served as a professor, author of a book, the new book, Sanctioned COVID Murders, the COVID Murders, found on Amazon.com. So I challenge you to look that up, buy the book, read the book. And just before the news, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Sheftall was in the lineup of talking about some of the issues that we're dealing with. Dr. Sheftall, let me ask you a question to trigger your thoughts and let you then go with it. You said in your book the vaccines were designed to be ineffective and poisonous. You go further to say the PCR test was not capable of finding new cases, as CNN told us every day. And he goes further with your statements. Speak to that for just a moment, then pick back up where you were and give us your introductory thoughts and your challenge to our listeners today to understand what COVID was and what it was not.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Youngblood. Let me first address the first statement you made about the vaccines being designed to be poisonous. Mm-hmm. This is very important. It gets a little bit complex. A lot of medical students had trouble understanding this when it was taught to us. But there is a system in our body that is used for surveillance. The body does not like it when we produce foreign proteins. And this is a great system because cancer cells produce foreign proteins. Mm-hmm. And there's a surveillance system that flows through our blood, and when we see a cancer cell producing a foreign protein, peptides from that protein get presented on the surface of the cancer cell, and the CD8 T killer cells, remember there's different kinds of white blood cells, there's T killer cells, there's T helper cells, there's T suppressors, etc. Those CD8 T killer cells, when they see a foreign peptide, which comes from a foreign protein, it's just a little piece of the protein, presented on the surface in the context of the class 1 major histocompatibility complex proteins, that cell will be destroyed. So the way to understand this is we've probably all gotten cancer many, many, many times in our lives, but our surveillance system removed those cancer cells. So thank God we have it,
yes.
Right? Okay. The problem is when you inject messenger RNA into someone.
Which is the vaccine.
Which was the vaccine.
Right,
that's correct. Enclosed in lipid nanoparticles, mm-hmm. as you will remember. Those pieces of messenger RNA get into the cells of our bodies and get translated into proteins. They wanted them to be translated into the, quote, spike protein. Remember that?
Right.
So that we would build up immunity to
right.
it and that would protect us. That was the idea. The problem is when we're making that spike protein, which is a foreign protein, that means that the cells that did it, that made that spike protein, and it gets chopped up into peptides and presented on the surface, if itself, the major histocompatibility and the CD8 T killer cells just keep floating right by. But when it's foreign, like the spike protein, they kill that cell. And the people that designed this vaccine knew that the spike protein was foreign and it was going to be presented, the peptides, the pieces of it, on the surface of all the cells that produced it. And those cells would be destroyed. Now, before the vaccine came out, sometime in the summer, I wrote about this, put it on Facebook, and it got taken down. But this was a very strong, good reason not to get the vaccine.
Yes.
Because I also warned people that those lipid nanoparticles, even though they were injected into our deltoids, which is in the upper arm, those lipid nanoparticles were going to get into the lymphatics and then into the circulatory system through a thing called the thoracic duct, which is right near our right clavicle, and get into the circulation and go all over the body, which, as everyone knows now, did happen. Even though all these UC San Francisco Medical School professors were saying, no, 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 it's going to stay in the upper arm and all this nonsense. Well, I contradicted them and said, no, it will not stay in the upper arm. And I turned out to be right. And this was before the vaccines came out. That was reason enough not to get the vaccine right there, let alone all the
Absolutely.
Other stuff I'm going to tell you. But when it goes around to the body, even the inner lining of our blood vessels, which are called vascular endothelial cells, can take in a lipid nanoparticle because the cell walls are made out of lipids. And as you know, like dissolves like. And the lipid can fuse with the cell wall and deliver the messenger RNA into the little cells that are on the lining of our blood vessels. And then those peptides get presented on the surface and those cells get destroyed in our circulatory system, that causes clots to form everywhere.
Yes. So that's why
there were clotting everywhere. It was obvious.
So that's what you're saying in summarization for our lay listeners.
Yes.
Is simply that they were designed
yes.
to be ineffective and poisonous.
Well, I've explained why they were designed to be poisonous there. Because they're destroying our cells and
yes.
all of our organs. That's poison.
Absolutely.
The reason they were ineffective is because the vaccine was injected into the arm. Yet the manufactured narrative said that the virus got transmitted by aerosols through the air. And that's why we were wearing masks, and that's why we were locked down, and that's why there was a 6-foot separation of people. But if that's the case, then the way that the virus comes into people is through their nose and mouth, right?
Right.
Okay. But they were injecting the vaccine into the arm. And I know a little bit about immunology, and I can tell you that when you inject an antigen into the arm, two types of antibodies are formed, IgM and IgG. But those do you no good at all, blocking something that comes through your nose. You need a thing called secretory IgA in the secretions of the mucous membranes to block it from coming in through your nose and mouth. And injecting it into your arm did not produce secretory IgA. So I knew from the beginning, this is the summer of 2020, that they wouldn't be effective either, and I was right. When the Israeli data started coming out, I proved less than a month after those vaccine rollouts occurred that the vaccine was not blocking transmission at all. And all the data jocks from the CDC were saying, oh, you could never have figured it out that fast. It's impossible to figure out that it's not working that fast. Mm-hmm. And even Dr. Bhattacharya, who I respect greatly, who's now the NIH director, agreed with them and said, told me in our videos that we did together, that I could not have figured it out that fast. But I said to these CDC jocks, I said, did you use calculus? And they would go, no. And did you use immunity in place? Did you take into consideration immunity in place? And they said, what's that? So I was using higher level math, and I could prove it very easily less than a month after they came out it was not blocking transmission. And I was right. 3 months later, they admitted I was right, because in April, they had enough data to figure it out the dumb way, kind of.
And yet the protocol that was being used with the vaccination, and along with that, was the Pfizer saying that the vaccine is 97.8% efficacious.
Yeah, that was all invented.
All invented.
100%
just
invented.
Just pulled the numbers out of the sky.
Pulled the numbers out of the sky. And as you may remember, and some people have spliced together Dr. Fauci saying it over and over again,
yes,
it's 98.5% effective. Then they've got a video of him saying it's 80% effective, then 72%, then 56%, yeah, all the way down to nothing.
Nothing.
But all that was invented.
Sure. All invented.
Yeah, because on January 15th, that was the date I published it. On January 15th, I said, even if you got the vaccine, you can still get infected and you can still transmit it to other people. I did it in a video. And thank God that I did a screenshot of it so I can prove it now. And that's in the book. Because by this time, the YouTube was taking my videos down because they didn't want me to tell the truth about this thing. It was going to reduce the number of people who took
censored.
The vaccine.
Censored.
Remember, they went to great lengths to get people to take that vaccine.
Yes.
And I was censored because I was telling them not to take it. Mm-hmm. And I was right.
Absolutely. So continue with your thought.
So that's the proof that it was neither safe nor effective. When they kept saying it's safe and effective, it really frustrated me a lot.
I bet it did.
To be censored like that.
Yes. So let's think on the subject now where we had, and we were talking before the show about the lockdowns and the effect that it had.
Okay.
And you talked about the mask and the ineffectiveness.
Yes. And let me say, can I jump in and say one more thing about masks? Can you think of anything more inhumane than blocking people's ability to breathe or making it restricted in some way?
Restricted, yes.
They restricted people's ability to breathe for no reason whatsoever. And because I explained yesterday from a physics point of view, and I use the electromagnetic spectrum and the size of the virus at 100 nanometers, as you will remember, and the smoke that could emanate through the front of the mask, which you can see.
Yes.
You can't see something that's 100 nanometers. You can't even see it through a light microscope, no matter how much you turn up the magnification. So I was saying that if you can see smoke particulates coming through a mask, imagine how easy it is that something that's so small that it's invisible can come through the mask. And I made that proof in March of 2020, and it should have ended the discussion on masks, because it was a very scientific proof, just took a little bit of common sense.
Well, you know, Fauci had even got to the point where he said maybe two masks, three masks, maybe four masks might be better.
It was ridiculous.
Yet he was seen at a sporting game in the stadium with no mask on at all. But he was
Correct.
Telling all of us we're supposed to wear masks.
Yeah, it was very hypocritical.
A very serious question that comes to my mind. If the spreading of the virus was from aerosol, from breathing, and a mask does not cover that, does not protect it, then you touched on the fact that the injection goes into a different segment in the body.
Yes.
What then is the answer? Because what I see, what I've researched on my layman's understanding of it, we simply had a major, major, major outbreak of a virus, a flu season. Speak to that.
Yes. Well, first of all, which I'm getting ready to present if we can get to it. I really want to do it today because I want to talk about the PCR and how the people were deceived.
Let's do that.
First, I have to review that there was no SARS-2 virus and no COVID-19 disease.
Okay.
But again, the issue of there being transmission from one person to another mm-hmm. Did not occur.
That's right.
Because there was no virus.
That's right.
And so it's impossible to transmit a virus that doesn't exist.
Absolutely.
So the whole talk about aerosols was false.
Yes.
Okay. So can I jump now and talk about my proof, which a lot of people want to hear.
Do so.
About the fact that there was no SARS-2 virus. And then, of course, by extension, no COVID-19 disease.
Yes.
It was all a rebranding of other diseases. Mm-hmm. But as I mentioned yesterday, there are three ways that virologists demonstrate that a virus exists, okay? They do so with photographic evidence, cytopathic effect evidence, and sequencing the genome. And I'm going to refute those three very quickly right now. The photographic evidence with electron microscopy fails because you can't tell the difference between exosomes, which are small bodies that get released when cells die, and viruses. And that's a direct quote from the Journal of Virology, who obviously has a vested interest in convincing people that viruses exist.
Yes.
Journal of Virology now. Mm-hmm. They say that you can't tell the difference. So forget about the photographic evidence, okay? The second one is cytopathic effects. Now, the theory about how viruses replicate is that viruses get inside of our cells, because remember, viruses are just a capsule with genetic material inside.
Yes.
They have no respiratory system, no digestive system, no excretory system, no way of making energy, etc. So they're obligate intracellular parasites. And when they get inside the cells, according to the theory, they will hijack our replication machinery, meaning our ribosomes, and their messenger RNA will go be treated by the ribosome and be translated into proteins that they need to make copies of themselves. Okay? Mm-hmm. It's all encoded in their RNA, according to the theory, that they will be able to make polymerase, to make more genetic material. They want to make structural proteins because they have a capsule and they have to make the proteins that are going to build the structure for them, inside of which the genetic material resides, okay? And then when lots and lots of copies have been made after hijacking our replication machinery, the cell will break open and release these million copies of the virus, which will go and infect other cells where millions will be released, and it'll destroy a lot of our cells, such as in our lungs, and that's what makes us sick and kills us, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But here's the amazing thing about it. We have not been able to see a photograph or isolate a single viral particle in the entire 5 years that this has been going on. Isn't that amazing?
Interesting, amazing.
Because when you, and the virologists will admit that and agree to it. And their reasons are, number one, there aren't enough virus particles for you to find one. They're very hard to find. And if when they say that, I say to them, come on, knock it off. Why are we being killed then if there are so few viral particles? What's killing us? Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
And then they say, well, the other problem is they're intracellular. They're inside cells. And when I say that, I say, well, then what's all this business about wearing masks and locking down? How do you transmit it from one person to another if they stay inside the cells?
That's right.
They have to be let loose and be free to be exhaled so someone else can breathe them in, if it's so contagious, right?
Right.
So both of their explanations make no common sense, and you don't need to have any medical background to refute what they're saying there.
And as you know, they were claiming that the kids, the children, were breathing out, and they couldn't see grandma or grandpa because they would kill the old people.
And yet, over the 5 years that this thing has been going on, we can't find one virion?
Not a single.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Fauci of the CDC said that the virus could stay on stainless steel surfaces like you have in your kitchen for 3 days, and yet we can't get one picture of a virion that's sitting on the stainless steel.
That's right.
When they're claiming that they can get it from a broken up cell African green monkey kidney cell. Remember I talked about that yesterday? Right. It's ridiculous. And you can't say that they're too small to be seen by an electron microscope because, as I said yesterday, the de Broglie wavelength of an electron is only 1 nanometer. And so you can see things that are 100 nanometers in diameter very easily and get a very good picture of them. Even the spikes that are only 10 nanometers in length, you can get a good picture of. And if you want an analogy for that, very briefly, if you have something like a house key and you're bouncing electrons off of it, which are very small, and they bounce off in different directions, of course, because there's teeth on the key and everything, and a collector plate is near there, and it receives the electrons that bounced off the object you're trying to get an image of, you will see a pretty good picture of a key.
That's right.
But if you bounced beach balls off the key, you'd never get a good picture of the key. It's too detailed and too small, and beach balls are big. So they would not be able to give you a picture of the key. You follow me?
Correct.
Okay. Now, let me go back to continuing the proof that SARS-2 did not exist.
Go ahead.
So I've proved that the photographic evidence, where we can't tell the difference between exosomes and viruses, rule out that one of the three ways they demonstrate that viruses exist. Cytopathic effects caused by viruses. If you could demonstrate that it occurred, you know, going into a cell and making copies of itself and it got some electron micrograph photographs of the viruses coming out, that would prove that they exist. The problem is, we can do the same experiment with the African green monkey kidney cells and the fetal bovine serum and the culture medium and the amphotericin B and gentamicin, like I talked about yesterday, what goes into the mix, without putting in the human specimen. In other words, leaving the potential virus out of it, and you get the same exact cytopathic effects. So they're not caused by viruses. They're caused by the poisoning from the antibiotics and the antimycotics and the starvation. Okay?
Right.
Is that clear?
Clear.
Great. Okay. So that rules out the second way that they're shown to exist. The third way is a little bit more complex, but I'm going to go nice and slow, and everybody's going to understand this. Okay. The third way that they demonstrate that viruses exist is by sequencing the viral genome. Okay? It fails because this technique that they use, next generation sequencing, cannot isolate and purify the virions. And if you cannot isolate and purify the virus, then you have no way of knowing. You cannot be sure that the RNA segments that you use to assemble into the genome all came from that virus. Because you can't isolate it and purify it.
Makes sense.
The RNA could be coming from something else, such as the fetal bovine serum, mm-hmm. such as bacteria that are in all of our lungs when we take a bronchoalveolar lavage specimen, such as the fungal RNA that's in our lungs. But mostly, it's human RNA that are in our own lungs, about 95% of it. So when they... And I'm going to go over the technique that they use briefly, because I think people did want to hear a little bit more than I gave yesterday.
Yes.
I just sort of made the statement yesterday, but I want to explain how next-generation sequencing works a little bit.
Good.
So that they'll understand.
And then if you could blend it with that or on the heels of that, talk about the test.
Yes,
that,
is going to flow directly into the PCR
test. Yes.
And I've got some great analogies for that. Okay, so to construct a viral genome sequence, nucleic acids must be isolated from various sources from the body, such as the bronchoalveolar lavage fluid, a nasopharyngeal swab. If you remember, they stuck those long Q-tips in our nose and everything. Okay. There's a problem with all of these sources because the nucleic acids obtained are not exclusively from isolated virus. And the reason is the way that they separate different components in the bronchoalveolar lavage fluid is by a thing called ultracentrifugation, which, as you know, the bronchoalveolar lavage fluid is put into test tubes, which sort of go out from the center in a machine like the spokes on a wheel.
Yes.
And it spins very fast, and it separates things by density.
For the layman's term, I just called it the spinner.
The spinner. And it separates things by density.
Yes.
So if you have a BB that's made out of lead versus one that's like a miniature ping pong ball, the lead's going to go further out and it's going to be in a different band.
Yes.
You with me?
With you.
Okay. Then, of course, we can separate the DNA from the RNA that's in the bronchoalveolar lavage fluid from the proteins, because DNA stands for deoxyribo. So it's of a different density than ribonucleic acid.
Okay.
And of course, proteins are completely different. The important thing to remember is that the ultracentrifuge cannot separate human RNA from bacterial RNA, from viral supposed viral RNA, from fungal RNA, because they're all the same density. Mm-hmm. They're all made up of the same nucleotides. Okay? So they're all the same density. And so when that section of the ultracentrifugation product is put into a soup and assembled into the genome, you could be getting human RNA into the genome. You follow me?
Follow you.
And of course, there's no business for human RNA to be in a viral genome.
Yes.
So it's a fake genome. Mm-hmm. And I talked yesterday about it being made in silico versus in vitro or in vivo. In vivo means in a living animal or plant. In vitro means in a test tube or a petri dish. And in silico means in a computer. Mm-hmm. Now, to get a good idea of what in silico means, it means it is not in the real world. And that's so critically important. In other words, the genome that they created in silico with bioinformatics programs, algorithms, that assemble these little pieces into a long genome of 30,000 base pairs, that exists only in the computer. It was not in the bronchoalveolar lavage fluid that they originally took out to find the sequence for the SARS-2 virus.
What I would say in the layman's term is voodoo science. Is that right?
Basically, all of it is, yes. Yeah. And that's the problem. It's pseudoscience.
Yes.
Now,
talk about the PCR test.
Okay, let me just complete this, because all I have a great analogy that people need to understand that will really put it in focus for them, because everyone's played this game I'm going to talk about when they were in second grade.
Okay.
All right. So we know that isolation and purification never occur because of the limitations of the ultracentrifuge, if you will. Now, what I want to talk about is next generation sequencing. You would like to find a viral particle, also known as a virion, an actual intact viral particle, which it should be teeming with them if this stuff is killing us.
Yes.
But we can't even find one particle. And of course, the reason is because they don't exist.
That's right.
But if you could find a particle, you could extract the genetic material from it and sequence it one base at a time. That's called Sanger sequencing.
Yes.
Instead, they use a thing now called next generation sequencing, which I call a license to lie. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, what happens is you get all these little tiny pieces of RNA in the soup. Okay? Remember, the DNA and the proteins are out of it now. We're just talking about RNA, but we don't know whether it came from a human or a bacteria or a virus or whatever. And those little things are called reads, because the sequence is read on them by the computer. And there, in the case of SARS-2, there were 56 million of those things. Can you believe that? In the patient, the 41-year-old patient from Wuhan that Fan Wu sequenced. Now, I know we're coming to a break in a second, so tell me when I need to stop. But I'll be able to take it up immediately on the other side of the break. But I just, 1 minute, okay. I just want to say that those reads, those short segments, are converted into their complementary DNA strand, okay? And the reason they do that is because the PCR test uses DNA, not RNA.
Touch on that quickly before our time collapses on us.
Okay. I'm jumping ahead because I need to explain a little more before I can jump into the PCR test, which is the most important subject of today, because I want to tell people how they were deceived.
Okay.
But when the RNA gets converted to complementary DNA, those pieces get chopped up. Now, you've read To Kill a Mockingbird, maybe.